This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the UN Children's Fund is urging countries to do more to ensure the safety and well-being of tens of millions of children on the move. UNICEF is issuing its appeal on International Migrants Day.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. Full details on this story coming up.
Also, delegates from South Africa's ruling ANC party began voting early today for their next leader. And 5 weeks after the military took control of the government and eventually forced out former President Robert Mugabe, the troops have returned to their barracks.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Delegates from South Africa's ruling ANC party began voting early today for their next leader in an election widely seen as picking the person likely to become the country's next president. Nearly 5,000 members of the African National Congress had been due to cast their ballots yesterday in Johannesburg, but the process was delayed. The new party leader will succeed South Africa's President Jacob Zuma, whose two terms as head of the party end amid numerous corruption scandals. Zuma will remain president until nationwide elections in 2019. The candidates for ANC leader are Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and former Cabinet Minister Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, who was once married to President Zuma. The ANC has won a majority in every national poll since the beginning of full democracy in 1994.
The UN Children's Fund is urging countries to do more to ensure the safety and well-being of tens of millions of children on the move. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva that UNICEF is issuing its appeal on International Migrants Day.
The UN Children's Fund reports some 50 million children worldwide are on the move. It says many young people are moving safely with their families who are voluntarily migrating in search of a better life. However, for millions of others, it says the move is neither voluntary nor safe. For example, UNICEF notes conflict has forced about 28 million children to flee their homes at great risk to their lives. In many cases, it says refugees have to use the services of smugglers and traffickers in hopes of reaching safety. In this regard, UNICEF spokeswoman Sarah Crowe says 2017 has been a pretty horrendous year.
We've seen some 400 children, estimated 400 children, who have drowned trying to make their way to Europe. We've seen an estimated 32,000 children who are currently in detention in Libya. Of those, 11,000 are unaccompanied. We've seen children, unaccompanied children, crossing mountain passes in the winter. We've seen them stuck on islands.
Crow says children on the move face deportation, drowning, and detention. She says thousands are abused, exploited, and enslaved during their perilous journeys. But she says it does not have to be this way. She says nations should look for safe and legal pathways for migrants, such as granting humanitarian and school visas. She cites other positive measures that can be taken to protect and care for migrant children. These include the promotion of community-based alternatives to detention, opening schools and health centers to migrant children, and ensuring access to justice and housing without fear of deportation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The multinational joint task force fighting the Boko Haram insurgents in Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria says it will hold about 200 former militants until Cameroon can construct a center where they will be socially integrated before returning to their communities. The ex-militants are currently at the barracks of the multinational joint task force in Mora, on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka is there and has this report.
Boko Haram, tu auras de mes nouvelles. Boko a touché mes parents sans me demander.
Soldiers of the Mora camp of the multinational joint task force fighting Boko Haram sing what is now their regular song after a successful operation. They have just returned from the border with Nigeria with 12 fighters whom they say handed themselves over to the military. Among them is Sule Bupabga, a 22-year-old Nigerian.
My village is Sandawajiri, Kete, the Kirawa, and Kwepe.
He says his wish is to return to his village at Sandawajiri near Kerawa in Nigeria, and that he regrets all the killings even though they were forced to carry them out. He says what he did was not good. There are nearly 200 former fighters detained in the camp. Some were arrested during fighting and others handed themselves over to the military. Cameroonian ex-fighter, 26-year-old Guma Wamwa, says he decided to report to the military after he escaped from a Boko Haram training camp in the Nigerian border town of Gamburu, but was barred from entering his village in the Cameroon town of Kolofata. He says he escaped from a Boko Haram camp with a motorcycle he was given to monitor and report to his former superiors each time a suspected group of people or a strange vehicle was seen approaching. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, says the government will continue to protect the ex-fighters. He says they have secured land in the border town of Meme, where all former fighters will be assisted in reintegrating to society. He says the ex-fighters have committed to assist the military in bringing back their peers who are still either hiding in the bush because they are afraid of the military or are still under Boko Haram control. 200 other former Boko Haram fighters are taken care of in the Mozogo Local Council by the governments of Cameroon and UN agencies. Their relatives are not ready to accept them in their villages for fear they may once again be infiltrated by the terrorists. The population says some of them may be spies or have been brainwashed with Boko Haram ideology. Moki, Edwin Kinzuka, for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
South Sudanese refugees at Bidi Bidi settlement in Uganda live a hard life, residing in tents and mud huts and surviving on international aid. But on Saturday, the refugees put aside their hardships and held a talent show with songs and plays that touched on the war back home, but that also expressed hope for peace. Halima Athmani attended the show in the Yumbe district of northern Uganda and reports.
Bidi Bidi is the world's largest refugee settlement, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency. It houses more than 300,000 South Sudanese who fled their country's civil war, now entering its fifth year. On Saturday, memories of the war came flowing out, but this time in acts presented at the talent show, ranging from dance, rap, music, and drama acts. The beats came hard and strong in the songs. Instrumentals and dancers performed on a makeshift stage that had no cover, exposing performers and the audience alike to the hot sun. The Kejebere Music and Dance Group won the show with a range of dancers from Uganda and South Sudan. 15-year-old sisters Maneno Nunas and Vicky Nyoka, dancers in the group, were brought to the Bidi Bidi settlement from Yei by their stepmother, who built a small hut for them and left the girls to fend for themselves. To survive, they sometimes sell food rations to buy other necessities. Maneno explained why they joined the talent show.
The reason that we should avoid thinking of those bad things about our parents and the bad things that they are doing for us. We need to forget home problem. Yeah, that makes us to join dancing.
Yonat Kundane, the Public Information Associate for UNHCR Uganda, says the talent show will be a recurring activity.
Our main objective is to create social cohesion between the different ethnic groups and the host community.
The winning team from the Bidi Bidi talent show will be mentored by local artists. Afrobeat musician Solomon Sentongo explains the reason he chose to work with the refugee youth.
These people are always feeling left alone. So as an artist, actually a young artist, I'm here to give them hope. So they will not actually be despaired, but they will feel important. And that's why we're here.
Reggae musician Inizu Ronald Peace had a strong message to the warring factions in South Sudan.
Hey, Mr. Soldier Man! What you fighting for? Hey, Mr. President, what have you done for my residents? Why this much greed? I see your eyes full of evil. Can't you see? These guns are gonna kill us today. Can't you see? The one love is gonna heal us. South Sudan, cause we are one.
Above all, the show demonstrated that Bidi Bidi's got talent. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Yumbe, Uganda.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib. 16 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Delegates from South Africa's ruling ANC party began voting early today for their next leader. The multinational joint task force fighting the Boko Haram insurgency in Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria says it will hold about 200 former militants until Cameroon can construct a center where they will be socially integrated. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Zimbabwe's military says it has ended its operation and troops will return to their barracks. The commander of the Zimbabwe Army, General Philip Valerio Sambando, said that normalcy has now returned to our country. He says the police are now back in charge of daily law enforcement. The announcement comes 5 weeks after the military took control of the government and eventually forced out former President Robert Mugabe. Sambando thanked the public for its support of the military and called on citizens to be alert for what he called malcontents and saboteurs. He said that members of the so-called Generation 40 faction of the ruling ZANU-PF party sought to undermine peace from overseas. The army said Operation to Restore Legacy targeted corrupt officials close to Mugabe and his wife Grace Mugabe. Once Mugabe resigned, the party accepted his former deputy Emmerson Mnangagwa as the new president.
Critics accuse a new non-profit organization, the Foundation for a Smoke-Free World, of acting as a smokescreen for Big Tobacco, a charge vigorously denied by the foundation's president. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva on the controversy swirling around this new venture, which is subsidized by a $1 billion grant from tobacco giant Philip Morris.
The president of the Foundation for a Smoke-Free World, Derek Yak, was one of the architects of the World Health Organization's Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. He says the convention is successful in preventing people from smoking and in slowing the increase of smoking in children. But he says it focuses little attention on trying to get the world's billion smokers to quit the deadly habit.
To actually accelerate a decline in the billion smokers, we needed to have better cessation, harm reduction, and better product regulation. And I think those elements, I don't think, have got the energy that we actually require.
Yak says more than 7 million people globally die prematurely each year from tobacco. He tells VOA the foundation's mission is to wean smokers away from their addiction by using new harm reduction tools such as e-cigarettes and vaping. Philip Morris International plans to contribute about $80 million a year to the foundation over the next 12 years. Yak assures VOA stringent safeguards are in place to insulate his foundation from the influence of the tobacco industry. Philip Morris is a producer of an e-cigarette-type product. Vice President of Communications at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, Vince Wilmore, tells VOA the alliance between the foundation and Philip Morris has no credibility.
This foundation is really a smokescreen designed to promote Philip Morris's business interest and undermine real efforts to reduce the death and disease caused by tobacco use around the world. It's hard to take Philip Morris seriously that they want a smoke-free world when they're marketing cigarettes as aggressively as ever, and they're fighting real solutions to reduce smoking.
The World Health Organization also calls into question the work of the foundation. It notes that the number of clear conflicts of interest involved with a tobacco company funding a purported health foundation is evident. In a statement, WHO says it will not partner with the foundation and urges governments and the public health community to disassociate themselves as well. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A look at news elsewhere. The United Nations Security Council is due to vote today on a draft resolution rejecting U.S. President Donald Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. The United States is one of the five permanent members of the council that hold veto rights, meaning the resolution drafted by Egypt is not likely to pass. The text of the resolution expresses deep regret at Trump's announcement earlier this month, both recognizing Jerusalem and starting the process of moving the U.S. embassy to the city. Trump said his decision is a recognition of reality, that Jerusalem is not only the historic capital of the Jewish people, but also the capital of modern Israel. Israeli leaders welcomed his actions, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who said having Jerusalem as Israel's capital is the foundation of peace. However, much of the rest of the world has condemned the move.
Power has been restored at the international airport in the southern U.S. city of Atlanta after an outage yesterday disrupted all flights in and out of the busy hub. The Georgia Power Company said it appears the outage was linked to a fire that caused extensive damage to one of its underground electrical facilities as well as circuit cables that served the airport. Hartsfield-Jackson Airport was without power for about 10 hours before crews restored power for what Georgia Power called all essential services, including concourses and flight operations. Delta Airlines has its headquarters in Atlanta and canceled about 900 flights on Sunday and 300 more today. The airport is one of the busiest in the world, with more than 2,500 daily arrivals and departures, carrying more than 250,000 passengers.
Back on the continent, the government of Burundi says a recently launched referendum campaign is aimed at strengthening and advancing the country's laws after more than 2 years of political violence. But some experts say the government wants to use the referendum campaign to legitimize its rule. For VOA, Mohamed Youssef reports.
The Burundi government has launched a referendum campaign to change the constitution. The government insists its move is to strengthen current laws and improve others. Agathon Rwasa, vice president of the National Assembly and a former presidential candidate, says the president wants to stay in power beyond 2020.
Till this very minute, the so-called project of amendment of the constitution has been concealed, and I wonder why. Since constitutional matter is a national one, why should President Nkurunziza hide it till this very moment? But for the time being, it seems that they are in haste. For what purpose, I don't know. All what we can see, it is clear that Nkurunziza is aiming at remaining in office for life.
The government says the draft has about 300 clauses that will be subjected to a referendum in 2018. President Pierre Nkurunziza's deputy spokesman, Alain Domidi, says the controversy surrounding term limits is one of them.
That also has been thought of because obviously it was very controversial in 2015 because people interpreted some articles of the Constitution differently. This time it's very clear that the term limits cannot be more than two. It means you can only have one term renewed once. Another thing is it's planned to have a term of 7 years, not 5 years like it was in the 2004 Constitution.
The 2005 Constitution and Arusha Peace Agreement brought an end to Burundi's long civil war, which claimed the lives of more than 300,000 people. Some critics still question the manner in which Nkurunziza contested and won the 2015 elections. His opponents accuse him of violating the constitution and argue the president was not supposed to run in that election. Attempts to hold talks to end the political crisis have failed several times after the government refused to negotiate with opposition groups they accuse of initiating violence in the country. It is estimated more than 2,000 people have lost their lives and more than 300,000 people have fled the country since 2015. Mustafa Ali, a security and conflict resolution expert, says Nkurunziza wants to use the referendum to legitimize his rule.
If many people vote and the majority vote that he continues staying, it is legitimate. The problem with that legitimacy is, and knowing of many African countries, is that that legitimacy could as well be bought because he is going to use the monies that he and his close handlers have looted from the Burundi people to buy their loyalty.
In 2015, the Supreme Court ruled in Nkurunziza's favour so that he could run again. He argued in his first term in 2005 that he was elected by parliament, not by voters. The government says the Electoral Commission has been given the green light to prepare for the referendum and it will have 6 months to do so. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5 and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.